My daughters have never heard English commands. They don't know what English commands for dogs are, so I'm seeing them out at friends' houses and other, you know, using German words. And people are looking at me like,
yeah. Yeah, that's great.
Your daughter knows how to speak? She speaks fluently? What the heck is she saying? And I'm like, I have to explain to them, like, this
she's
is why. Like,
yeah, in
you know,
foreign language.
Platz, Fuß, yeah. You know, off, you know, whatever. And they're like, what is she even saying?
Hey, welcome to this episode of 1075 Chatter. I'm here with Jason Fry from the Clinton, Connecticut Police Department. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, we've known you for about...
It's coming up on like 6 or 7 years.
I was going to say six or seven years. You came to us about 6 or 7 years ago for the first build.
Correct.
I know it was kind of a little bit intricate build for us because... We had involved some, it was canine unit, which is something we really hadn't done before that. So tell us a little bit about your background so everybody knows who you are.
So Jason Fry, I'm a corporal with the Clinton, Connecticut Police Department. Corporal's just a fancy word for like a road supervisor type of deal. I've been there for maybe 13, coming up on 14 years. So I'm cresting the hill right now onto the back half. I've been a canine handler for about 10 of that. I'm on my second dog now. My first dog was Sonny, which you guys outfitted the vehicle for me for him. And now I have a new vehicle, I have a new dog, and I'm kind of starting over with a new platform, and you guys are helping me all set that up.
Yeah, Sonny's retired?
He is retired, but he's here.
Good.
Brought him both with me.
Oh, good. Lucky for him. So glad he's still riding around with you then.
Turns 11 next month.
Oh, good for him. God bless him. I have a pit bull at home that's going to be 11, and he's got all kinds of medical issues. And
he's
a nightmare, but he's my dog, and we love him. So, and he's you know, people are like so afraid of pit bulls, and it's so weird because he's the most loving. He wants to sit on your lap. He doesn't realize he's 75 pounds and wants to just sit on your lap all the time. And
it's
I'm
the
like
most misunderstood breed.
Oh yeah, it's just the way they're raised. Like any other, I mean, any dog can be aggressive, right? Depends on how it's raised.
I got two of them.
Yeah, exactly, and. Different, you know, they have an on-off switch, which is really interesting. Like, when I worked in law enforcement, I worked with canine guys. I was never, you know, we didn't have a canine unit. So, but I dealt with guys that were canines, and they're like, oh, yeah, dog comes home with me, and dog, you know, loves my kids and this and that. Yeah. And then you see him at work, and you're like.
What dog is this?
It's not the same dog. It's not the same dog. So, but I know, you know, that's all part of the, you know, it's just like, you know, military training for anybody else. It's the same thing for the dog. The dog knows when he's working. The dog knows when they're not working. Correct.
That's right.
Perfect. So, what breed? The new dog's name is. I'm sorry.
Monty.
Monty.
So Monty's got a special name behind him too. So, 2 years ago, just a little over 2 years ago, we had two officers in Connecticut from Bristol, Connecticut, that were killed while on duty. One of the officers, Lieutenant Dustin DeMonte, he was my academy classmate. So okay. I'm getting the chills just talking about it right now. The goosebumps are going up. But we just thought that this would be a good way to commemorate him, honor him. I didn't realize the pressure I was going to be putting on myself by naming a dog after someone I think so highly of. But, you know, all in all, it's really good. It keeps me on the right track. And we're just trying to do right by the department and do right by the family and do right by my friend.
That's great. That's great. I mean, so Monty is how old now?
Monty's 2 coming up on 3.
Okay.
He's a Shepherd, all black. He's beautiful. From Europe, we got him around a year and a half of his age. We did our 600 to 800 hours of training, and we got out on the road, and I actually had a split partition in the Explorer before I got my new vehicle, so I had both dogs that I was working because Monty was certified in patrol, which means he could do the tracking, he could do the bite work, he could do, you know, all the stuff, but he wasn't certified yet in narcotics. Sonny had the narcotics and patrol, so... Sonny getting older, physically getting harder to do stuff. We decided that we were going to use one dog for the narcotic stuff, Sonny, and then we'll transfer the more physically active stuff to Monty. And we slowly had a transition where Sonny took less roles, Monty picked up more, and over the course of about 6 to 8 months, we kind of transitioned Monty to a full retirement. And it was just a sudden thing where I had to walk in and just say to the chief, it's time.
He's done. He's retired.
Yeah, it's time.
He's got to retire. Yeah. And he's home with you?
He is. Well, he's home with my wife.
But
he is home with me.
He's home with you guys,
yes. I bought him for the cost of $1. from the town. And an ironic story behind that, we had a animal cruelty case in Connecticut where a bunch of shepherds were seized, and several of them came to our pound. It wasn't our town, but the state had so many shepherds that they had to split them all up. Yeah. And every time I go get fuel, it's right next to our pound. I'm a dog guy. I got to go into the pound and see, because we have three towns that use the pound. So I don't know every dog that goes in there, but I try to make the dogs that are in our pound the most adoptable dogs possible. So I go in there and I see what dogs have certain traits that I need to work on, if I can do some obedience skills, what dogs have triggers that I need to, you know, let our animal control officer know that, hey, you know, this is something you need to watch out for. You know, might not be good around a family with kids or something like that. And I walk in, there's these shepherds just lined up, and I'm like, this is my glory. Like, I'm sad to see that all these shepherds are in a pound and seized and stuff like that, but I'm like, this is my breed right here.
Yeah.
So one particular shepherd, his name is Jagger. I fell in love with him from the minute I saw him. He had to stay in the pound for a certain amount of time because the criminal case was still going on, so he hadn't yet been relinquished to the state to be adoptable. So every single day I'd wake up with my two little girls. I got a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and we would go to the pound in the morning, feed the dog, go play with him, go sit outside with him. Afternoon on work, on shift, you know, I'd sneak him into my cruiser. He would come ride around with me. I can say that now because they can't get me in trouble now that the town owns it. But essentially, the dog became adoptable. I got the call literally while the case was being handled in court from the state animal control officer. Said, come pick up your dog.
Oh, that's great.
I drove straight down there. I got him. We got all the vaccinations done. I saw a lot of potential in him. We went to, after a bunch of training, you know, I pitched him to the chief for some kind of program. I was like, this dog is just, he's got so much potential. He's born to do something. Like, I know he has this bad past, but he's a great dog. Like, he's born to be just more than a pet. And the chief's like, I can't do it. Can't do it. So I kept him. I started taking videos and sending videos to my master trainer and sending the videos. And finally, I go to training one day, and my master trainer looks at me. He goes, what are you doing with this dog? I said, I don't know. I know he's destined for more. Even if it's not with me, even if it's not with our agency, he's got to do something. Like, he has it. So he said, okay, just give me a little bit. And I think it was maybe like the next day or a couple days later, the chief, you know, apparently got a phone call from my master trainer, just like, don't be an idiot, buy the dog. Just buy the dog. So the same dollar that I gave them for Sonny, they handed me back for who's now Jagger, who's been turned into a therapy dog. He sits up in our high school. He's with our school resource officers. He's been assigned to him. That's where my old cruiser is right now. So
okay.
Still in use, still getting a lot of dog action, stuff like that. He works in our detective bureau, so that pullout cabinet is crucial for him.
Yeah.
And he's now up in the school. He goes throughout all of our schools. We have three of them in our town. And, I mean, he's just become a pillar of our community. So
that's a great story.
Now we integrated two shepherds into our small little PD family.
That's a great story, though. Yeah. And you know, you went from, you know, a dog that trying to get adopted to now as a therapy dog.
It was a dog that potentially could be put down just because nobody wanted him.
Trust me, I know. Like we were talking before, I have a pit bull, and you know, that's where the majority of those poor guys end up is nobody adopts them. They're afraid of them, and they just put them down. And
but I will tell you that every single shepherd that came into our pound got adopted.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, I know. I take pride in being able to say that one.
That's great. I mean,
I don't know if it's because of me, but I just know I had a part in it. There's a lot of people that had parts in it.
Oh, I'm sure. But I'm sure you had a big part in it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've talked to guys that are canine officers. It's, you know, they talk about cops being a different breed. That truly is true about canine. Because you're not only working with the dog when you're at work. The dog's with you all the time.
Yeah. So this is the way I look at it. I have 24 hours a day I'm with that dog. If I'm at work, he's at work. If I'm sleeping, he's with me sleeping. If I'm home, not sleeping, not at work, he's with me. Like, I am with him 24/7. I'm not even with my family, like my wife and my children, that much. Like, I am glued to this dog. So it has its ups, it has its downs, trust me. But overall, I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Yeah, people say that it's like they're part of your family. Unless you work with your family member, mm-hmm. you're never going to spend as much time as you do with that canine. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a long time commit. It's a commitment.
Yeah, 8 to 10 years per dog.
Yeah, and it's a commitment. It's a commitment on on your part because most of the departments that I know is they don't handlers don't change.
Correct.
You know, very rarely do they change handlers on a dog, especially mid-career.
Yeah.
If they're going to do it, they usually do it. It's usually
like,
right?
Yeah, promotions. Like, certain departments have certain policies. Like, hey, listen, if you become you go from a patrolman to like a sergeant or something like that, you can't be a handler. We don't have that. It's kind of like a, we're kind of in that phase where it's unwritten, but like, say I was to get promoted, I'd be fortunate enough to get promoted. They wouldn't take the dog away from me, but it would most certainly be my last dog. And I think Monty is my last dog. I mean, I've dedicated so far, I'm at 10 years and I probably have 8 more years with Monty. So you got to look at, I'm going to have 16 to 18 years as handling. It's great. Comes with a lot of perks, but it also comes with a lot of downsides. I carry around 2-3 cell phones, you know, phone calls in the middle of the night, not only just for deployments, but other handlers. Now that I'm a seasoned handler, I'm a senior handler in our training group, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, a smaller agency handler is like, hey, this is what I got. Like, you know, what should I do? Like, you know, they haven't been in those crucial situations because yep. They're in such a small town. It really doesn't happen all that often. I say, if this is what you have, you know, this is what I would be doing if I were you, but also make sure that, you know, you're not violating the person's Fourth Amendment rights, that you're not putting yourself into a situation where you're going to have to use force that's not necessary or unjustified and protect the handler as well. And, you know, even after that, it's the next day, oh, okay, this is what I did. How do I write it? So, you know, there's usually follow-ups to it as well. Yeah. So, you know, I take pride in that, but, you know, at some point I'm going to have to say, listen, I got a, you know, 5- and a 3-year-old little girl and a wife. She's awesome. She understands, you know, she hears the phones go off. She hears the conversations, the doors open, the doors close. You know, when I leave at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, Sonny's going crazy because he
wants to go. He's used to it.
He hasn't left that lifestyle.
Yeah.
It's still there in his mind, but, you know, she deals with it too. And you know, when I first got Sonny, I was like thinking I became a handler. Now that I have hindsight 2020, my family became a canine handler family. Like, it takes a little bit of everybody. And
oh, yeah.
There's funny stories that come along with it that we can get into, you know, with my girls and stuff, because...
Feel free.
Yeah, like...
I'd love to hear some stories.
I would probably say the best one is, you know, Sunny being almost 11, my oldest girl being 5, the thing with dogs that come into the United States and handlers and stuff like that, they typically come from, you know, somewhere in Europe, and they don't speak English. No, there's a couple reasons why we don't use English commands with our dogs. A, I don't want other people to be able to give commands easily. And B, I don't want to have any crossover between languages. So, you know, if I was to approach you as a suspect for whatever reason, I'm justified to take out the dog and I have to separate myself from the dog. If I'm standing with the dog, you know, we're one target together. You can focus on us, but I can down the dog and then walk away and create like a triangle. Yep. And I don't want to say suspect, get down on the ground, and him hear the word down and pretty much otherwise do something I don't want him to do. I want him to be ready to leap into action and being in a down position, which we in German would call Platz, or off league. And if you're going to do Dutch or something like that, you know, there's no crossover with those things. And if you go over to Europe, they use English, you know, it's vice versa. But where I'm going with this is like my daughters have never heard English commands. They don't know what English commands for dogs are. So I'm seeing them out at friends' houses and other, you know, using German words. And people are looking at me like,
whoa. Yeah, that's great.
Your daughter knows how to speak. She speaks fluently. What the heck is she saying? And I'm like, I have to explain to them, like, this
she's
is why.
To
like,
sit
yeah.
Down in
you know,
a foreign language.
Platz, Fuß, yep. You know, off, you know, whatever. And they're like, what is she even saying? So it became comical. Like, I didn't even realize that. They don't know what heel means. They don't know what sit means. They, and that goes for both the dogs and my girls. So
that's pretty funny. You don't like you said. You wouldn't. Why would you think about that?
It never crossed my mind until I saw the confusion on someone's face, and then it dawned on me. And then we had a conversation about it. I'm like, how many other people have my children done this in front of, and I just never noticed. And they're probably just too afraid to ask or say something.
Yeah, what's going on with your kids? Yeah. Why do they?
But
they
all know I'm a handler, so they assume there's
something to do
with
that.
Yeah, but to be able to explain it to them brings a lot of clarity and clears up some confusion.
Yeah, it's funny because I worked on a task force, so I know the call outs, I know the nights, I know that kind of lifestyle, and it wears you out. I mean, I did it for 14 years, and it was a grind. It was a long grind. You know, run out the door at 2:30 in the morning. You get a lead on a suspect.
Yeah.
And we worked with different canine units, and some spoke to the English commands, and others were in other languages. So it was always interesting.
Yeah, but the stress that comes along with the two, not just the hours, the stress, because you're getting called with a dog. You know, this is a very particular asset that you call for a very specific reason, whether it be tracking and apprehension, building search, narcotic search, search for bombs, whatever your dog is certified to do. You're getting called out to every worst of the worst call.
Yeah.
So you're having to make split-second, very, very crucial decisions that have the safety of the dog, have the safety of me, the other officers, and suspects and bystanders. I mean, it's a lot of pressure to have. And again, attorneys, courts, they all have years to pick your decisions apart that you made in a half a second.
Like that, right?
Yep.
So yeah, I know. And it's tough.
It can build on you.
Yeah, it's every day stressful. The reports are, everything becomes a stressed situation. But yeah, I remember I was out with, we were doing warrants with, the New Jersey State Police years ago. And we had a canine guy with him. He goes, if I release the dog, just make sure you stop. He'll run right by you. I go, you release that dog, I'll be laying on the ground in the fetal position. Because that thing was big, and he would, I don't want to get bit by it. I was bit twice. Once when I worked for UPS, I got bit by a dog.
I just got bit by a boxer like 2 weeks ago. I mean, it was a nothing call. I went there for a dog tied to a tree, just to check the welfare. And the owner was with the dog. The dog clearly wasn't tied to the tree because, I announced my presence from a little bit away because the owner didn't see me. And I can show you the video after this. I literally just look at the dog and I say, friendly. And it's a beautiful dog, boxer, sitting there nice and pretty looking. And this thing launched at me.
Wow.
Got me right in the hip. I was like, of all people who could get bit by a dog, I know I'm going to get mocked at my PD now. Like, I know it's coming. It's
supposed to be the dog whisperer, right?
I know, but the irony is in this one, I have a history with bites, not just dog bites, but I've been, in the last 2 years, I've been bit by two humans as well. Just tackling them. One was out of his mind on drugs. The other one was highly intoxicated on alcohol, and they both bit me. And like the first one, it was like, okay, it happens. The second one was like, do we need to start like retraining now on like where to position your body? And then all of a sudden I get bit by a dog and I'm like, chief, it wasn't a person this time. It was a dog. So
yeah, it's tough. I mean, dog bites hurt. And I got bit. It was a friend's dog and he caught me right on the wrist. It was it was a big dog and he caught me on the wrist and I had to go get, they put me on antibiotics for 3 weeks. I was like it was a puncture. I had three punctures from the dog. But, and it hurt like a son of a gun.
Yep.
Those teeth are sharp, so.
They are, and even like I do the decoy stuff at our training days, and even with that, I've torn my bicep twice, and it's like I look like the Michelin man in this suit, and that's the pressure that these dogs can do, so.
God, I don't know how you guys do that, because that's kind of a little bit insane.
You can only do it for so long. The body can only handle so much, just in one training thing, but over the course of time, you got to be a, almost like a sadistic person to want to do it. You got to be able to at least enjoy the pain or tolerate the pain and not be in fear of it.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen guys do the where they're the suspect running away and they got the suit on dog comes and hits that arm. I mean, it spins them around and takes them to the ground. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, the force has got to be incredible. Those dogs are so strong.
But the control that those decoys have to have, because you catch a dog wrong, you're snapping a tooth, you're breaking a jaw. Like, if you just stand there and let them come at you 20-30 miles an hour and just stand there like a brick wall, and that dog's not going to slow down just because you're not moving. He's going to hit you just as hard as if you're running or standing there. So you got to know how to absorb a blow, absorb a bite, catch a bite, target the dog to not come straight at the middle of your back, but to come for like, say, a tricep bite or a frontal bite where you're going into like the front pec or the bicep, and your hands are hanging out, your face is hanging out.
I was going to say,
like,
your hands,
there's other parts of your body that aren't protected, so.
Yeah, usually the hands are sticking out. I mean, so you got to make sure those are protected.
But I'll tell you that the first bites that you do as a decoy are probably the best for the dog, not best for the seasoned dogs, I should say, because you got to teach a dog how to bite. But once they get confident, and then you throw a new decoy into the suit, now you're emanating like, what's like the, you know, endorphin that comes out, adrenaline.
It's the adrenaline.
Yeah, and that's like crack to a dog.
They sense
the
fear.
Yeah, you think like dogs know when you're happy. Like you think the therapy dogs are the dogs that I let you know that, hey, your blood sugar's low or something.
Seizure dogs and stuff like that. Yeah, it's amazing.
It's because of sense of smell. Your body creates different senses, and when you're happy, you know, you smell happy to a dog. When you're sad, you smell sad, and when you're in fear, you secrete adrenaline, like, and that to a confident dog is like one step below having like a legit street bite where there's warm blood coming out. You know, it's some pretty important stuff to expose a dog to when you're building up their confidence.
Well, and they say that people that are afraid of dogs all the time, they get bit the most because they do that fear comes out, and that's why some people that are deathly afraid of dogs get bit. And you know, once you get bit once and you're afraid of dogs to begin with, it just becomes
you get shut down.
Yeah. You're never gonna deal with dogs or have a dog. So it's interesting. So how many hours of training did you go through?
So Sonny,
to start.
Sonny being my first dog, and Sonny was what we call a green dog. No training. He had a little bit of obedience, but basically nothing. But he had been vetted by a master trainer, been, you know, signed off by the vet that, you know, he has no signs of like hip dysplasia or anything like that. Once I started, they give him to me, and you have to have the dog. No commands, no nothing, but you stay with the dog for a month, maybe 2 months.
And how old is Sonny at this time?
So typically a patrol dog, a shepherd, or anything like that, you really don't want to start a dog that's going to be doing bite work before the age of one because they haven't fully developed. You know, their jaws aren't fully formed, you know. All their teeth might not be in, and you don't want to have, you know, create an injury to a part of the dog that, you know, is not fully developed. So usually around just prior to one or just a little later than one is usually the normal starting point.
Okay.
You can do a little earlier. You can do a little later. It's fine. But that's like the average right there. So he was just under two when I got him. And I met my master trainer in a parking lot. You know, I didn't even know that was the day I was going to get Sonny either. I just got a phone call. Come get your dog. So I drove an hour. I met my master trainer in a parking lot. He handed me a bag of food. He handed me a leash, a collar, and a dog, and said, I don't want you to do anything with the dog. Dog doesn't talk to anyone else. I just want dog goes out, dog goes with you. Dog is on a leash at all times. You go to work, the dog goes with you. You go home, but you don't take the dog out for anything other than bathroom breaks. You just have to create a bond. The dog has to learn that you're now dad. And just through normal basic instincts, you know, you feed the dog. I started out with a raw diet, so it gets very difficult to feed by hand, which is, and oftentimes a way that you can create a bond with the dog is, you know, it's smelling you, it's getting it right out of your hand. You know, it doesn't get anything unless, you know, kind of the dog earns it. But with the raw food, I really couldn't do that, so I had to feed him like six times a day in a bowl. But he had to, you know, come up to me and just no commands, no nothing, and it only could come from me. Like my wife, I had no kids at the time, but I was married. Nothing to do with her. I said, you just have to leave him alone. I know he's cute. I know you're gonna see him with me. There might be a little jealousy going on that just I'm spending
steer,
more time.
Steer clear of the
but
dog, right?
But just give me a chance. Just let me learn how to do this. So after about 2 months, I started going back to canine training, and they recognized that this was going to be a dog that fits. There was nothing glaring that stood out where, you know, the dog prone to aggression with me or we just kind of clashed or anything like that where they would want to cycle the dog out. Maybe it's a good dog, just not a good dog for you.
It's not a good fit, right?
Yeah, and which is a very important thing because you can't have butting heads for 8 years, you know, and then in retirement too. So I finally started my canine training, which was about 800 hours I think I completed. Now there's no set, this is day one and this is how many weeks you do. There are programs that are like that, but mine was not like that. It was just at this point the dog needed to learn how to do basic obedience and I needed to learn how to teach the dog. So that's kind of the discipline of the program here, and having a good trainer is that the trainer doesn't train the dog and you watch. The trainer trains you, and you how to train the dog, because during that process you guys are continuing that bond. You're getting, the dog is getting commands from you, it's getting its rewards from you. So I cycled through, I think it was right around the 400 or 500 hour mark, I was done with their narcotics imprinting, and that's what Sonny is. He's a narcotics and patrol dog, but I did the narcotics first, and that's a whole lot of repetition with, you know, the four basic, well, him, five, because he was imprinted marijuana. But now that it's legal in Connecticut, you know, most dogs overnight, when that, we can go into that later, but with the legalization of marijuana, a lot of dogs got retired overnight. And it's something nobody ever thinks of, because now I can't take a dog out to go sniff a car, because you could have 20 kilos of cocaine in there, but if there's one marijuana joint, there's the affirmative defense in court. How do you prove that your dog smelled cocaine and not the marijuana? I can't. There's no different alert for the different types. But to regress back to where we were, a lot of repetitions, a lot of rewards, me learning about timing of the rewards, me learning to be patient when things weren't working right, you know, me learning frustration when things went really good. And then I come back the next day and it's like, do you not even remember what we did yesterday? Like, you were so good yesterday. I came out all confident, high and mighty, chest out, and you just tanked it. And I say you, but it's we as a team just tanked it. And we looked stupid, so a lot of humbling moments. And I got the narcotics done, and then a couple more dogs joined in that were going to start out with patrol first. And patrol is a whole lot of stuff. It's tracking. It's apprehension work, which is a fancy way of saying bite work. Building searches, on leash, off leash, area searches. So anything that has human odor on it, you know, you take this ring that I have on my finger off and you throw it in a field. Well, my human odor stays on this ring for a certain amount of time. Just like if you were to rob a store and you throw the gun out the window, you know, that gun's going to hold human scent. Depending on weather conditions, location, stuff like that, it's going to hold it for a certain amount of time. Your dog's trained to go find that odor. So there's a lot of different disciplines. And even though it's 8 hours a day at canine training, it's 24 hours a day that, you know, you're doing it for. And I say 800 hours, that's 800 hours worth of 8 hour days. Not to include the 16 hours of every other day.
Yeah. It's got to be draining on you as well at that point. Because it's
draining, but there's a sense of pride that comes with it. Like, when you go out and you have, like, your first legit canine deployment where your dog just nailed it, like, there is no feeling like it. It is like you just went skydiving. Like,
you're the proud parent.
Yeah, it's just like, holy crap, all that work was worth it. Like, he went out and you might have had four deployments in. No dog's ever going to be 100%. And it gets really hard as a new handler to take your brain out of the equation. Like, if your dog is tracking someone, you know, you might say, well, as a suspect, I would have taken a right here. But your dog's pulling you straight or pulling you to the left and not doing what you're thinking. It takes a lot of discipline not to insert your behavior into it.
No. And guide the dog and take him off the track.
Let the dog do what the dog has been trained to do. And there's a culmination where you will have that one call. Every handler who's ever seriously deploy their dog we'll have that one moment where you just like, holy crap, it worked. I can't believe it. Like, that was perfect. And then you go gloat about it for the next week, and then he comes out and he bonds a track, you know, a couple days later, and you get humbled again.
It's just like a regular cop, right? I mean, good days, bad days, it happens.
Exactly. But, you know, and there's different kind of handlers too. I'm a cop with a dog, so I come from a 27-man department, you know. It's not a large agency. We have about, I think, 15 square miles. We have a sitting population that averages around 15,000, but we have a shopping outlet that brings, I think, 10 to 20,000 shoppers a day through there. And then we have a shoreline community with really, really wealthy houses where, you know, they get used five times a year, but, you know, we have rental communities where they come and they rent a house on the beach, and we have boatloads. So our population, we could have upwards 50,000-60,000 people, and you might only have four cops working. So I'm a cop with a dog. I come out as a cop, and I have to see, does the dog come out of the car? The dog is a tool. It's in its toolbox. Do I need that tool? And a dog is a Swiss Army knife. You know, it's got multiple tools that it can do. But there's other agencies, you know, larger agencies, where you're just a dog handler. You don't take domestics. You don't take motor vehicle stops.
Just wait for the call. You wait for the call for the dog, right?
You wait for the call, whatever agency, and we go. So we at our training group, we do local certifications, which are state of Connecticut. We do New England certifications. We also do national certifications. So I can work in any state. I'm certified to do it. I'm vetted through an association to do it. So there's agencies around us that will call me all the time because they don't have dogs. So even though I might have a 15,000, you know, resident community, I might get called to the neighboring town that has 30, 40,000 and they have no dogs. So, you know, I wish I was one of those guys where I could just focus on the discipline of dog for a while. And, you know, I have what I have.
Well, and you mentioned something before that I found interesting, was, and I didn't know that. You have no sheriff's departments, right,
in Connecticut? No. So we are state police who have full jurisdiction anywhere, and we have local police. There is no sheriffs where – so I'm part of Middlesex County. Like, I would love to have a sheriff's department that could just do the towns in Middlesex County. Or I don't know, does a township work that way? I know you guys have townships out here.
Well, we have townships, but we also have – we have county sheriffs. And, yeah. And they have canine units and other things available. Yeah. So, like, my local town doesn't have canines.
Correct.
The town next to us doesn't have canines. There's one that's close by that has canines, so mm-hmm. they'll call them first. If they can't get a dog, if the handler's not working, because they're all small departments, they'll go right – the next call's to the county, mm-hmm. and the county has dogs. So you don't have that luxury – because you don't have a county. So it's you guys get the call.
Yeah, we scapegoat it a little bit. So you guys might have a county sheriff that has arrest powers and authority within, like, a larger jurisdiction. We have what's called a mutual aid compact, where towns that are near us, as long as they invite us into their town for a specific reason, we are qualified to use our authority, you know, within that jurisdiction for the reason that they called us. So they can't call me in for a dog call, and then on my 20-minute drive back to Clinton, I see a car doing, like, a nonviolent felony or something like that. You know, if I'm anywhere, like, say I was driving here in my police cruiser this morning, and I'm in Connecticut, I can't do it in New York or New Jersey, but I see a felony, like, you know, I'm allowed to take action. I'm almost required
to. Yeah, you're required to take action.
But if I'm driving back from, say, a canine deployment that's 20 minutes outside my jurisdiction, I drive back and there's a car that's doing 75 and a 65, I can't pull that car over. It's not my jurisdiction. It won't stick. I'll probably get written up. I'll probably get yelled at, and, you know, my hands.
It's not worth it.
Yeah, my hands stopped. Right? And there's been a shift in Connecticut. A few years back, we had the Police Accountability Bill, and it put a huge, huge amount of pressure on officers, and it took away a lot of proactive policing. I do think there is a lot of benefits that come with police accountability. Obviously, no profession is not doing something wrong, or something could be better. I'm not sure how I want to phrase that.
There's bad apples in every profession, right?
That's probably a really accurate way of saying it that I should have said
that
way.
But there's bad doctors, there's bad lawyers, there's bad teachers. I mean, it happens everywhere.
One of the things that got passed through with it was qualified immunity. And we have no more qualified immunity in the state of Connecticut. And what that means is that if Officer Fry pulls you over, and I didn't violate any of your rights, I didn't do an unreasonable search, I didn't detain you unlawfully, I didn't violate any policies, rules, or laws, but you want to sue me, you can sue Jason Fry now. You can sue me, you can take my house, you can go after my assets.
Really?
Overnight.
So they passed that in Connecticut?
They passed that.
Because we still have qualified immunity, as long as you don't do anything illegal.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're following the rules and regulations, you have that qualified immunity.
Yeah. In Connecticut, you don't have it anymore. So overnight, you went from having all these cops doing a lot of proactive policing, motor vehicle stops, you know, being a big one, huge decline in motor vehicle stops when that passed, because nobody wants to pull over a car, and now it's like the hot topic on the news, and people are just like, oh, this could be free money. Let me sue him.
I'll sue this guy.
And get tied up. And I don't know anybody that personally has been sued. You know, it's been a few years since it's passed. So we've gotten a lot more confident with what we are allowed to do, because when a bill gets passed, like, you don't know every provision of it. So you got to start to learn it over time, trial and error, start seeing what other cops have happened to them. And we're starting to get back into it, which I really appreciate. And we're getting back into it in a time where now I'm a seasoned officer and I get to teach the younger officers kind of how to do what I did when I first started. Even though there was a period of time where we all kind of went away from it, I get to bring them back to where I was in the beginning, which kind of rejuvenates me a little bit.
And it's different. It's amazing. You haven't been there. How long have you been there?
13 years.
And in 13 years, it's probably changed a lot.
Yeah.
Because when I did my 25 years, I look back and I'm like, wow, it was so different when I started to when I finally retired. It was like, night and day.
Oh yeah.
Like we didn't when I started, people didn't even have cell phone cameras. Then cell phone cameras became big, and then body cameras was probably some agencies had them in New Jersey when I retired, but they were just really just rolling them out.
We didn't have body cameras or dash cameras until about 3 years ago.
Yeah, I retired in 2019.
My first decade, nothing like that.
Yeah, and that's just a whole different world, right? Now you got to remember if you're going to the bathroom to make sure the body camera's not on, otherwise somebody's gonna.
Yeah, and you're not, talking crap about anyone where they can go back and read it.
Especially the boss.
Yeah. No, you highlight all the compliments, on that one, and then you mute it and say what you got to say.
Yeah, it's interesting. Now, do you guys have police licensing as well in Connecticut? Because that's something they did in New Jersey.
I'm gonna go with no because I have no idea what you're
talking about. Okay, so basically in New Jersey now you have to have. It's like a driver's license. You have to have a license to be a law enforcement officer. So you have to – not only do you have to go through the academy, but they're going to go through your background, your
– Oh, yeah. No, that's been standard for us since – yeah.
But here's the thing that they did in Jersey is they have a board that can pull that license.
Oh, yeah.
So what happens is you get guys that jump agencies, right? Because what happens in your township when the chief has a bad apple that they want to get rid of and the guy's like, hey, I'm going to – so-and-so township, they're like, great.
Here's your letter of recommendation.
And they give him a great letter of recommendation.
Yeah.
And then the guy gets there, and he's the same, pain that he was when he was, wherever he was before. And it's like, so that now they're trying to eliminate that problem by saying, hey, listen, the bad apples that get suspended, that have the problems, that are the problem, now they're going to pull their license. And if they pull your license, you can't be a cop anywhere in the state of New Jersey.
We had something similar to that, and in Connecticut, I'm not sure if it ran through here, but we had a shift from pensions to 401ks. When you have a pension, with that police department. You can't really pull that pension and just go jump to another one unless it's like one of the state pensions, which we don't have. So a lot of agencies were losing officers because I can take my 401k from this agency and just roll it into this one, and there was no incentive to stay long term. So if you didn't want to be there, you can take everything that you've socked away into your 401k and just jump. And also,
that's like any private business, right? So you work here, and we have a 401k. Yeah. You get the 401k. You go work Johnson & Johnson. You can take it wherever you go because that's the federal law on it.
Yeah, so we would have municipalities being like, hey, you're almost done with the process. So when you become a cop in Clinton, you have to be vetted by an agency, and an agency sponsoring you to go to our police academy. It comes at a cost. Well, the academies were getting a lot of complaints, apparently, that officers were going through, doing their field training period afterwards, getting certified as a cop, leaving to go to the next agency, and they just left that agency to foot the bill, and now the other agency is reaping all the benefits. So they passed, like, a rule, and it's with our police officer standards and training that I believe it's, like, if you have less than 3 years on, when you switch to another agency and they paid for you to go through the academy, the agency that's hiring you has to reimburse the original hiring agency for those costs. Now, it slowed some things down from what I've seen, but at the same time, a lot of officers are still doing it because that agency doesn't have to wait 6 months to get that guy out of the academy, doesn't have to wait 3 more months to get him through into field training. They've already done that. They're already certified.
They've passed the academy. Yeah. They're certified, right?
And they've passed a background. They've done the polygraph. They did their field training, and they got all good marks or decent marks. And they're still jumping ship, but now everybody's shifting back to pensions because they're starting to see they can't retain officers that way.
Yeah, we have so in New Jersey, we're a little different here. We have a two-year rule. Mm-hmm. So if you were to jump out before 2 years, the agency that hires you has to pick up the cost. We have the alternate route program here too, which has worked. So the alternate route is, you literally don't have a job, you pay your way through the police academy, you go through as a civilian, and usually before you finish up, you're picked up by a department. If you're good at what you do.
Yeah, I mean that would probably get a lot more be an incentive for a lot more officers to try to get hired. I mean, this is 13 years I've been on, so not long. I think there was 100 to 200 people trying out for my one position. We just had a hiring process. We had two, and we hired two. We just swore them in last night. One's certified. Only one certified person was willing to leave, and one new hire that we're not going to see him on the road for about a year.
Yeah, that's tough. It's become a you know, it's become a tough mm-hmm. profession. People don't want to do it for a myriad of reasons.
Yeah.
They just don't want to. I know, you know, they used to say they used to get, like New Jersey State Police used to get thousands of applicants.
Yep.
Now they're looking to get hundreds. You know, so, and it's, I think it's, I don't think it's a Northeast thing. I don't think it's a Connecticut, Jersey thing. I think it's a national yeah. issue. And I think it's just, you know, people just don't want to go into that profession anymore because of, you know, again, how do you want to go to Connecticut when there's no qualified immunity?
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
A lot of states still have qualified immunity as long as you're doing what you're supposed
yeah,
to.
Yeah, as long as you don't violate their rights, don't violate your policy, and
yeah,
you know, it might be a headache from paperwork and IAs and internal affairs investigation and stuff until you get cleared. But hey, the body cameras work out for us in that instance.
Yeah, and that was it. That was another thing. As I was getting ready to retire, guys were like, oh, body cameras, body cameras, body cameras. But you hear more stories of body cameras vindicating officers than yeah. they do, like, implicating
yeah, them. As long as the agency doesn't abuse it, we have a policy in place that say, you know, your supervisors can't review it just to find you doing things wrong. They can review videos just to, you know, verify that your camera's working accurately, your audio is getting recorded accurately, it's placed on your body in a position where it's has an optimal view, it's not, like, in your lower left-hand corner looking at the ground while, you know, everything's going on in your face, and they're allowed to do that, and you know, if they happen to see something while they're doing it, yeah, so be. You know, they can address it there, but they can't sit there and just watch video after video after video to wait for you to find something wrong just to write you up for it. I mean, that would be a morale killer right there. That would tank it if that ever happened. And thankfully, a lot of agencies don't do that.
Well, I mean, that comes to like, hey, listen, this guy got promoted over me,
mm-hmm.
and you know, oh, yeah. something happened. Like yep. you know, there's a lot of anima. You know, listen, just because a guy doesn't like somebody. Hey, maybe I'm going to go watch his body camera. Look at, he did this day. That, you know, that was never the goal of the body camera.
Yeah.
It was to, you know, for the interactions, it was to make sure that, you know, police were doing what they were supposed to do. And quite honestly, like, you look at body camera video, look at car video. And I'm not even talking police car. I'm talking about how many times you see people, like, say they you know, oh, they got rear-ended.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, they put the car in reverse and they had a camera.
Are you talking about the video that just came out with
yeah.
the guy in the turnpike?
Yeah.
And then he got out and saw that the camera was in the car.
And he froze.
Yep. I saw that one.
I just saw that too.
Perfect example of that.
You know, so it's, you know, cameras, and cameras are everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't care yeah. where you go. There's cameras everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, you walk around an office building, you walk around anywhere, there's yep. multiple cameras, hallways. I mean, pretty much your only place of sanctuary, which, you don't even know if there's not a camera there, but his bathrooms, restrooms,
yeah.
you know, but locker rooms, you know, but it's, we went from having nothing on camera yeah. to having
yeah.
the whole life on, your whole life on camera. And, you know, I know in my town, they had one of those First Amendment auditors go to the public library and, you know,
oh, yeah.
he made them look foolish because they don't really know, you know, and, you know, they're just trying to do what the policy of the library is. But in the meantime, they're like,
yeah,
the guy's like, you're violating.
But it's a policy of the library, you know. If the library asks you, hey, you know, it's our policy that there's no video or audio recording on here. Well, you can be asked to leave the property. You can go stand right on the sidewalk and video from there, and there's nothing you can do. But
yeah, it's a. I'm just glad I'm retired.
Yeah,
I'm glad I'm retired. Yeah,
12 more years.
Just 12 more. Is it 25 for you
it's
guys?
25
as well?
For us. Yeah,
it's 20. It's 20 in New Jersey. 25 if you want your full benefits with mm-hmm. medical. So, and we do have a statewide pension system here, so it's all one pension system. So,
are you trying to recruit me?
I'm not. I'm not trying to recruit anybody. Listen, I don't want to. Yeah. You know, but you would definitely have a rough go because you would probably not have a canine here for a long.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the other thing is they're all small departments. I mean, you come from a small department, but we have a lot of small departments here. And guys, mm-hmm. We had guys that started when they were 18, way back when. You know, they retired at 40, 43 years yeah. on. I'm like, you know, and they finally forced them out. We have a maximum age, 65, you got to go. So your police and fire retirement, so it's the New Jersey State
yeah.
Police and Fire, their maximum age is capped at
that's
65.
That's a pension rule?
Yeah, that's okay. A pension rule. So at 65, you have to retire. I mean, I know like Florida,
yeah.
a lot of places, there's no age requirement. I don't know if I'd want to be chasing anybody at 65, 70 years old on a foot chase. I mean, you know, it's definitely at some point you gotta
hang it up. You know, it's only for so long. And the sooner you can realize that, the easier the decision to make the choice is going to be.
Well, and I think it comes down to a couple things too with that is you don't realize what a toll it takes on your body, not just the chip, but just the physical, not sleeping all the time and not, you know, and it affects all aspects of your health. Mm-hmm. It really does, you know, and, you know, unfortunately, I just had an academy mate commit suicide.
Oh, sorry.
I got that call a couple weeks ago, like 2 weeks ago, and it was a good friend, and hadn't talked to him in a while, but, you know, he's just struggling with something, and it happens. And, you know, it's something that, you know, we just don't, you know, you don't know what the guy's going through. You know, he doesn't talk about it, but it happens to guys, and, you know, it happens to people in the profession, and people think that, you know, firefighters, cops, EMTs, you know, they're invincible. They're not. You know, they're not invincible, and
we're just, you know, as fallible as everyone else.
And some of the stuff you see over the years, I've been a volunteer fireman for 33 years, so, you know, you see the tragic side of everything.
Yeah.
You know, you see young people, you know, in car accidents that have died. You know, you see all that stuff, and people say, you know, and you look at the suicide rate of EMTs right now.
Yeah.
It's, you know, paramedics and EMTs are through the roof, because, you know, they're going out, they're grinding away every day. Nobody's checking on their mental health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a, you know, unfortunately, like, you know, with the canines, they got it the best, because you're the one making the, hey, listen, he doesn't need to, you know, he's not worried about a pension. He's retiring. You know, it's time.
Yep.
You know, and unfortunately, sometimes, you know, it doesn't happen in law enforcement where, you know, it's like, oh, man, I got to make it to 25 years. And then the guy makes it to 25 years and his back's bothering him. He's got this going on. He's got that going on. He's not making what he wanted to make in, you know, in retirement, and all of a sudden he takes his own life for whatever reason, and it happens. You know, it's a sad thing. You know, guy was 54 years old, 55 years old, with kids.
Yep.
Just, you know, it's really rough. It's you know, it's something that doesn't get talked about a lot. You know, that people just don't seem to understand the daily stresses, and I'm sure it's, you know. You bring it home, your wife, your kids, everybody sees it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's, you know, it's a stressful job, so.
And there's times I have really bad days, and I don't say bad days, like, in terms of, like, mental health-wise. I mean, in terms of, I'm giving an example. Like, I think it was last month, first call of my shift was a 28-year-old something who hung himself out the second story of his house to have his wife come home and find him hanging from a balcony, and my last call of the day was a 17-year-old who jumped in front of a train. Like, I, on the drive home, again, I ended up where I think 15, 16 hours I worked that day. I just pulled into the commuter lot and just sat there and decompressed for a minute, because I don't want to take that home to my family. You know, I go home, smile comes on. You know, my wife knows. She's been with her for a long time.
Yeah, they know.
She knows when I'm hiding it, but I don't want my kids to see that.
Yeah. I know. It's tough with the kids, especially when they're younger. Mm-hmm. As they get older, they can understand a little bit more. But so how has it been with the kids? Like, how's the transition with the dogs been with the kids? Great?
Oh, yeah. They've been real, real great. The dogs with my girls. Sonny, you know, my older one, he's super protective. You know, he's like a shark around them. He just kind of circles around them. And, you know, it's weird when you say that, you know, dogs have like an on switch and off switch. Both dogs have an on and off switch, mine clear as day, but they both have the opposite one. Monty, who's my current dog that I'm working, and God help your installers who are doing the install right now, because both of them are in the back of that cruiser with the windows down, so I'm sure they're
barking their heads
off.
Yeah,
I'm sure they're going crazy. But, you know, he is quiet as can be at home. He doesn't make a peep. He doesn't bark. You know, he's always stepping on your heels. He's always right next to you, you know, no matter where you go.
Just in case
but he doesn't make a noise.
He wants to make sure you don't leave without him. That's.
I put him in the car. The dog does not shut up. He does not. Like, it's like my ears are ringing. Like, officers, dispatchers are all frustrated with me because I can't hear a word I'm saying. Like, I'm trying to acknowledge him or transmit information, call out a license number or something like that. And at this point, just to acknowledge, I just click the microphone just so they can hear I keyed up that I heard him. But then you have Sonny, who I put him in a cruiser. He doesn't make a peep. He's like the silent attack dog. Like, nobody ever knew he was there. You could have 100 officers standing right next to the car. He hasn't made a single peep.
Oh, really?
But he doesn't shut up at home. If a leaf falls from the tree, that dog is going nuts. And it's even worse now for my wife. You know, now that he's like hyper vigilant out our window looking down our driveway all day long while I'm not home. Like, wait, where's dad? Where's dad? Where's dad?
He's keeping his eyes open, right?
Yeah, but he doesn't stop. He all day long. So it's weird how, you know, when you say they had the on switch, the off switch, they do, but they're polar opposites, these dogs. So luckily it works well with my kids. You know, Monty in the beginning was a young dog. He was a little bit of a bulldozer, but nothing was malicious. Nothing was whatever. Kids are naturally loud, especially little girls, and they're high pitched, no whining noises. They run around like crazy with little toys in their hands, and of course to a dog that's very appealing, you know, high pitched noises. And you know, my daughter playing keep it up with a balloon or some game like that, I really got to pay attention, because dog's going to tell you everything you need to know. You just have to learn how to listen to the dog before he has the bad action that you want him to do, or the good action. Like, you know, I can say, you know, see that he's sitting there staring at that toy while my daughter's running by with it, and I can preemptively tell him, you know, to leave it, and he'll turn his head. You know, he hears me, but I have to catch those things, and my wife has gotten really good at it too. Sonny in his age, I don't know if he's having a hard time hearing or if it's selective hearing, but
I have a little bit of both myself, so I know the feeling.
He just kind of wanders outside, and you might call him in, and he'll come in, but he's going to take the long route. You know, he's not going to be straight line from A to B. He's going to, you know, do a half a circle around the yard while he's slowly sniffing the ground.
And he's used to working, yeah. So this is, you know, to leave him outside a little bit longer and let it, you know, that's part of his, you know, his nature, right?
Yep.
That's a dog's nature. So, I mean, I take my dog for a walk, and it could be a 7-minute walk, and it takes me 15 to 20 because we stop, he sniffs the air, he starts sniffing the ground, he's looking around. We have a lot of deer around here, so you know, they really get him. He did tear his ACL.
Yep. So did Sonny.
We have two torn ACL. My dog has Addison's disease and a heart condition, so you know, surgery's kind of.
Did your dog tear one ACL and eventually tore the other?
Yep.
Yeah. So typically that happens. Even if you have a surgery on one,
they
compensate by. Yeah. And now you're putting undue stress on the other one, so it's typical. It's sad, but it's typical.
Yeah, I mean, he's 11 years old, so he's getting around without much pain. You know, we don't notice any pain. So, you know, for now, we're just going to kind of let it, you know. And he still likes to go for his walks and stuff like that. So, you know, he's adapted better than most, you know. So, and if he's having pain, we'll address it. And, you know, but he's got a heart condition. He's got a large heart. He's got Addison's disease, which he can't make his own adrenaline. So he's got to take steroids every day. So he's like a, you know, he's a project, but. Great dog, just, you know, has some medical conditions. So, but he got into it with a buck, is what happened. A buck stood its ground because it was the rut.
That's what bucks do.
Well, during the rut, you know, any other time of the year, the buck runs off. Well, this time he slammed on the brakes, and what happens as soon as he slammed on the brakes? He popped the knee. So, that's what happened. Yeah, but
I mean, I'll tell you this story. It was probably the most nervous moment I ever had with Sonny when you say, you know. Your dog got into it with an animal. I just had Sonny. No Monty in the picture yet. I didn't even have kids at this point. I pull home from an evening shift. I get home. It's probably about midnight, pitch black. Of course, my wife didn't leave the floodlight on for me, so it's pitch black. And I've had a problem with Sonny at least once a year getting into a skunk. Like, without fail, it happens at least once a year. So I was extremely cautious when I let him out of the car. At the end of the night, I clearly know whether he's seen the skunk or not by how he exits the car, because he exits like a bullet if he has something he's going to go after. So I kind of like take him out by holding his collar and just kind of guide him to the ground and just make sure he's not like itching to tear off, because I don't want to deal with that skunk squeal ever again.
Oh.
It's going to happen, but you know, if I can limit it. So I let him out one night. It's pitch black. Comes out and he's calm, so I just let go. 30 seconds later, there's no lights on. I'm in full uniform. I go home in full uniform. I don't get changed at the PD because I'm on call. I just hear chaos like 20 feet in front of me, and I can't see anything. I quickly take off the flashlight from my duty belt. He's into it with two coyotes, like 15 feet right in front of my cruiser. I'm in my driveway, and I had a decent amount of woods around me, so it's not like a very urban area. It's in the woods, and it's not on – you hear them every night in the woods. But to be up in the driveway, I'm like, what is going on? I shine the light. Everybody just stops and just stares right at me like a deer in headlights. And the coyotes take off, and Sonny takes off chasing them into the woods. And I had the best recall I probably ever had with him when he's taken after them. The chances of me actually having a dog hear me in recall was like zero at that point. And for whatever reason, from a crazy distance away, he heard me. He stopped, and I didn't have the flashlight shined up into the woods at this time. I had it on him. There was a gap between them, and he gets like 2/3 of the way back to me, and I shine it up, and I see the coyotes like both like perched up, and their eyes are glowing. He turns, he sees the eyes, and he just takes off again, and there was no stopping him at this point. Into the woods, a couple hundred yards away, in a swamp, there's like 6 inches of muck and water, so you can't even follow their tracks, but there's just acres and acres, and I hear it. Somebody's dying in there. Like, it, like you could hear, the, like, you know when a dog gets injured, you're like, yep. That yelp. Like, there's aggression going on, there's yelps going on. I'm like, they just killed my dog. Like, I can't find him. I called the PD. I was like, have everybody on the shift start getting on the adjacent roads around here, like to see if he pops out anywhere, because he's not coming back. Like, I'm up to my knees in muck and mud. Like, I'm halfway in the muck and mud, and I'm hearing it to my left. I start going to my left. All of a sudden, it's coming from my right, and it's like I had zero perception of which direction I was even going. I had agencies that were near us with other handlers that were coming out to help me find him, and about 20 minutes go by, and I got nothing. I can't find any blood. I can't find any whatever. And I come up onto a road that I later identified. I had no idea what road it was at the time. And all of a sudden, here comes light or the glowing eyes towards me. I'm like, I don't know if this is Sonny or whatnot.
Friendly or not friendly,
so,
right?
Sonny looks like a wolf. Like, he legit, his name was Lobo when I first got him, which is Spanish for wolf. And I didn't know who was coming at me. But it was him, and his face was just covered in blood. It's all going down his neck, and he's all wet from in there, so it's dripping, and you know, the blood that's in his mouth is, you know, coating the water that's on him, so I can't tell how much of it's blood, how much of it's water. And he finally comes up to me, and he's smiling, he's panting, and I'm like, I'm so thankful that I have my dog back and that he's still alive, but I just want to, like, pain in the butt. Like, I know you want this PG, so I'm keeping the swear words out, but like, I had some choice words, and I'm doing a once over medical check. Like, where's this blood coming from? Like, I'm checking his mouth, his tongue, his teeth. I'm checking his neck. Like, I brought him back into the swamp. I washed him off with water. Like, all the red's gone. I'm like, that wasn't his blood. He got into one of them.
Which is odd, because usually they hunt in packs. So
yeah.
Two of them together should have, yeah, and that's why you're nervous. Cause
and on the Ring doorbell camera system, you know, we have the neighborhood alerts and stuff like that. And like 2 days later, I had a Ring alert come up. Someone says, hey, I've been seeing the female coyote in the area, you know, or coming down the normal trail that I see it at on my trail camera, but I can't find the male anymore. Has anyone seen it? And I'm thinking to myself, oh man, that's the one he got.
You got the
couldn't
male.
couldn't find it, because the female, I guess, usually walks in front down the trail, and the male will follow afterwards. And I guess
just gone. One.
They've never found him. He's in that swamp somewhere.
It's crazy.
Or he made it out, but he didn't make it far.
Yeah.
But I thought I lost him that day. Thought I lost him. So that's my story about, you know, my dog going after an animal. And they've gone after deer, they've gone after a lot of things, and it's frustrating, but that was the one that sticks with
me. Mine paired up on a raccoon once, and the raccoon latched onto the pit bull's face, so that was always interesting, you know, rabies shots again and all stuff. So
yep.
How old was Sonny at the time, roughly?
You know, I have to base this off of, I was in a different house and I didn't have any kids yet, so it had to have been maybe 7-8 years ago.
Okay.
It's weird to say 7-8 years. I really don't feel like I've been a cop for that long, but yeah.
Well, that's because you enjoy your job, right?
I do. I love my job. You know, we've talked about a lot of, I don't know, for lack of a better word, depressing stuff that comes along with my profession, but there are so many ups to it. I mean, you know, you can make this career miserable if you want to do it, but you can also make it extremely rewarding too.
And there are guys that there are guys that do it every day, and they try and take everybody down around them. Oh, this place sucks. This guy sucks. The chief sucks. This sucks. I hate this place. We, you know, every agent, and every agency has them. I don't care where you go. There's always that one or two.
You're right.
That every agency has. And then, you know, there's times where, you know, but you got to make the best of it, right?
Yeah.
And you got, if you hate it that much, leave. You know, I don't understand why people will stay for 25 years,
yep.
Yet they'll be miserable for 25 years. That's like, it's like doing a prison sentence then at that point, right? It's if you're miserable.
Yeah, and you're making.
I loved my job. I had a great time at my job.
No,
but,
I do too.
But I'm glad I've moved on, because as you get older, it's just a tougher job to do.
Yeah, I guess the one thing that's kind of like uplifting for me is that, like, and this is agency specific, but when I got hired, it was all like, I was a junior guy for a while, and then all of a sudden, like, everyone hit retirement age, like half our agency all around the same time. So we got this huge wave of young blood coming in, and, you know, with that becomes the energy to want to go out and do stuff. You know, of course, every cop that comes out, they want to go out and make cool arrests and do stuff, but we also have a lot of community-oriented policing that goes on. And, you know, with a dog, you know, you could have 10 officers at a call, you know, and two of them could have been complete a-holes, but they always remember the guy with the dog. So you always have to they might not know your name, but the one who had the dog, the one who had the different uniform, like, you always stand out. So you have the ability to take that and make an impression. And if you make that impression good, then you create the next generation that's going to come in.
No, you're right. And it's a shame, though, that there's, and like I said before, there's bad apples in every profession. Mm-hmm. You just hope that the cream always rises to the top and that guys move on. I mean, I know in my place there was always a couple of miserable guys, because in my town, and not in my where I worked, but in my town, you know, they were always, oh, this guy's been here as chief for 20 years. I don't think he's ever going to retire. And then everybody kind of stagnates behind him, and they get frustrated. And I'm like, well, you know, you got two choices. Either you're going to ride it out and he'll eventually retire when he's ready, or you got to go to another agency if it's going to make you happy.
And I'm very fortunate. We got a great chief. We got pretty decent morale compared to some of the agencies and other officers that I talk to. So I really have no complaints. And again, being halfway through and to say that my entire career has really decent morale the majority of the time, and, you know, have a couple low spots, but for the most part, everything has been really, really good. I was able to fall into a spot, and some things, especially smaller agencies, a lot of time is about timing. You know, there might not be promotions for a long time. There might not be, as a dog handler, we might have two dogs, one's a therapy. I'm the only patrol dog that we have, but I've tied up that one position for over 10 years now, and I'm going to have tied it up probably to about 18 years by the time I'm done. So anyone that got hired within the last 10 years that's ever wanted to be a canine handler is probably never going to see that if they stay at our agency. Same thing with firearms instructors, bike officers. We have Marine Patrol. We do from Connecticut all the way to New York, Long Island. I mean, we have a huge sector, and I'm fortunate enough, I fell into a point where I get to operate the boat. You know, I get to do all the dog stuff. I'm a field training officer. I've been a firearms instructor for over a decade now. I mean, I have a lot of hats that I have to wear, and, you know, that's what brings me here is, you know, I got met up with Ryan, you know, through social media, and, you know, he kind of saw, and again, he's a car guy, so he can kind of look at it, and he sees something different than the average person sees when he looks at the car. He thinks about, you know, how can I make that more convenient? How can I make the expedite certain things? How can I make that more organized? And I happen to have a decent sized social media page, and he saw it, and we started talking. Next thing I know, I'm in New Jersey, and I'm talking to you guys, and now it's round two.
It's round two, yeah, and you're going to be surprised by what they've done for you.
So I walked in this morning. So again, I came here at least a couple months ago. And you guys just took a quick look at the car. You know, I kind of talked about some of the things I need to do. He had a decent idea of what I do because of the first car. But now I have a pickup truck. Now I have an F-150, not a Ford Explorer. It's a whole different ballgame. So he took what I have to say, and he's kept a tight lip. I walked in this morning. I was kind of like peeking my eyes through the windows, seeing if I could see anything, and there's nothing. And he walked in. He goes, hey.
Time to go down the street.
I really don't want you to see this quite yet. I want to throw it in your car, and I want to get the raw reaction of when you walk up on camera and just you see what we did for you. So I'm super excited to go see what's there, because the pickup truck, I do have a tonneau cover on the back, like the flat one that's retractable. Yep. I started out with a foot or 2 feet in. They have this slot where you can put a board in.
Yep.
I started out with a board. Now keep in mind, I have a paramedic bag, I have my normal BLS bag, I have rifles, shotguns when I'm doing firearms instruction, I have multiple rifles, multiple shotguns, multiple pistols, cases, just thousands of rounds of ammo. I have all my dog equipment, you know, tons of leashes, vests,
and what do you everything. Get? What do you get? Like 3 feet?
Yeah,
not even 2 feet?
Yeah, in the Ford Explorer is nothing. And it was really difficult. And, you know, now we're into this one, and I'm just like, I started out with that board, and I'm like, I take one left turn, and just everything's on one side of the bed. I take a right turn, or I stop too fast. Everything's up front. Now I get to a medical where a guy needs CPR. I have to
crawl
retract the tonneau cover, jump up into the truck, find the piece of equipment. Hopefully the battery hasn't flown out at this point. And you know, it just wasn't working. So we found this, like, God, it's from like one of the first generation Dodge Durangos. It's like a metal pullout. It's not meant for a pickup truck at all. And I threw that in the back of the truck.
Temporary fix.
Yeah. Like, just seeing that anything's got to be better than what I'm doing right now.
Yep.
And I threw it in there, and did it work? Was it a little better? Yeah, it was. But Ryan saw it, and he goes, hell no. I can't do it. Come on back.
Yeah, he's going to take care of you. I'm sure he's got something special. So, and I haven't seen it either, so I'm sure you'll be excited and surprised when you go see it. And you know, hopefully you're very happy with it. Hopefully it works out. It's been a pleasure having you here today. I wanted to ask you more about your relationship to Glenn Frey, but you said you really don't know much about it. So
just that it's there. Distant, but it's there.
So if you want to listen to Smuggler's Blues, feel free. You know, Glenn Frey.
I had some Eagles on the way up, so.
There you go. So, but Jason, appreciate you coming out. So, you know, everybody's time's, you know, days are busy, and taking time out of your schedule, we appreciate it. And
always a pleasure.
We'll get you down the street so you can see your new ride, and hopefully it meets your expectations. So
I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.